Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to the Celebrant Talk Show. I am your co-host, Sarah Aird, and with me I have...
My name is Withers, Joshua. Is that a correct... But that's not incorrect.
Is that what you've... It's not sure if that's what you've decided to go with.
Sarah, we are celebrants. We are professional celebrants, and I'm going to use a professional naming algorithm to allocate myself some digits. So then when people refer to me, they don't just say, you know, Jay or J Dub or what up Withers, but they'll refer to me professionally in a formal manner. Withers, Joshua.
No,
doesn't work.
No.
All right. Well, hey, J-Dub in the house. How you all doing?
Oh, that's a really good start.
Yeah, that was warm. That was friendly. I feel that if anyone was listening to this podcast, and God forbid someone would, that would be like, there would be a welcoming welcome.
Hey, you didn't play the theme music.
I 100% did, yeah.
But you didn't get to play it so that I got to laugh at it.
I know, but you did because you introed yourself and you just started. ladies and gents, this is what we call pre-show banter, and this is the Celebrant Talk Show.
I told you before, we don't say ladies and gents anymore.
Oh, we don't.
Do you know, last week I went to the circus.
When you say circus, do you mean the literal circus or did you go to like an association meeting?
I mean a literal circus, but it's a circus for adults. There are no animals involved. It's my dear friend, Eleanor Kirschbaum. She is a celebrant here in Melbourne, and she's also a circus performer and now circus producer. And she has created this incredible show called Rouge. She's just taken it to the Edinburgh Festival and all around the world, and she's amazing. Anyway, their MC talks to ladies, gentlemen, and friends beyond the binary.
Wow. That's actually...
I know!
That's great. I like that.
I really like that. I thought that was really cool. I'm not quite sure it's going to go down well at normal weddings, but I really liked it for the kind of show that this was. It was, yeah, I was really happy with it.
So for the last couple of weeks, I've been in America. I was in New York City for a couple of weeks and then Yosemite for some ceremonies there. And for the first few weeks while we're in New York, we stayed in Brooklyn, and there's a nightclub. It's in the genre of nightclubs, and but it's a venue that adults can go to in the evening for entertainment, but it's like an intellectual nightclub. And it was actually founded by one of the guys behind the TED Talks. Like he was one of the leaders behind that, and he's broken out. And it's adult entertainment, much like your circus, but it's like a... I didn't physically get to it because it just didn't work with my schedule. But I met one of the guys that works the door there. He's a son of a friend, and the place does, like, whether it's trivia night. So there's the common regular things, but they also do some super cool, like, entertainment-y things. They'll have talks, but there's alcohol, and I'm like, I want one of those things near my place so that I can go and do entertainment that isn't just getting slaughtered and, you know, whatever, but is also still fun. How good's adult entertainment?
That does sound very fun. Do they have, like, board game night and stuff?
Yeah, all of that stuff.
I love it. Love it. That sounds awesome. So much better. Delightful. Anyway, hi, welcome back to Australia. I know you've been back for, like, 3 days. Have you caught up on your jet lag and your emails?
Neither. No, I am carrying both around. Like, which animal carries this stress in its glands? Is that humans?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I'm carrying both my jet lag and my emails in my glands. Just carrying them around with me like a sin. Like I'm like the guy in the old Roman times that would walk around with like chains and so that his sin would be shown to everyone. That's me, but in Shugan on the Gold Coast.
That sounds great.
Yeah, no, it's really a beautiful thing.
Good luck with that.
And the most positive thing about my current life season is that not only are there the regular emails that I haven't had a chance to respond to yet, but there's then the second round of emails like, hey, Josh, just checking if you got my email. Like, cool.
Oh, we love those.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're always fun.
And the beautiful
thing
is...
They're always the ones where you go, oops.
Yeah. Like, so Tara, my assistant, she's been managing like the kind of the ones that she can do, but the ones she can't do are the ones that are getting back to me, and they're like, you know, the couple that are getting married next week, and I just haven't had the emotional energy to just totally sit down and like give them like half an hour of my life and reply to their stuff. And I need to do that. That's my next thing. When I get off the podcast from you, I'm gonna hit that, and I'm just gonna go crazy, and I'm just gonna fight it.
Excellent. That sounds very sensible.
Yeah.
And also exhausting.
Very.
Now, I know we have a lot of things that we would like to discuss on today's episode, so I think that we should probably jump straight into it. What do you think?
Absolutely. Well, I wanted to start on this issue because I think this is something that would ring true for everyone. Like, we've all had that one person in our life. Sometimes it's a parent, sometimes it's like a grandparent, auntie, uncle, it's the cool kid at school, whoever it is, that person that you've been desperately seeking approval from all of your life, and you've never publicly communicated it, but there they are, just trolling you with their lack of love. And we, Sarah and I, we've finally reached a place of acceptance with that person in our life, the marriage law and celebrant section of the Attorney General's office. They've finally knighted us. They have reached out the hand of compassion, the hand of welcoming. They have extended the olive branch, and they said, Josh and Sarah, we see you.
Sure. Only after being asked to do so,
okay,
by us. So, you know.
Hey, thanks for taking away that poetic.
It didn't come from any place of goodness. So, basically, twice a year, the Marriage Law and Celebrant section of the Attorney General's Department in Canberra meets with representatives of celebrant associations. And up until recently, that's meant that they have met with COCA, which is the Coalition of Celebrant Associations. And there's at least one or two reps from most celebrant associations that belong to COCA, and that's who they've met with. But recently they've expanded the kind of wording on the website about who they meet with. And now it says that they meet with celebrant associations and networks. So we emailed MLCS a few weeks ago to say that we, as the founders and directors of the Celebrant Institute, would like to be recognised as leading a network of celebrants, because we have over 200 members, almost 220 members, plus a lot of people who listen to this podcast. And so we figured that maybe suggested that we have a network. And they wrote back, well, first of all, I have a tracking system on my email, so I can always see when people open my emails. They opened the email where I requested that we could be part of this group of celebrant associations and networks. And then they proceeded to open every email I've ever sent them in the last 5.5 years. So I think they were going back through the emails going, just how much of a problem is this person? And do we really want to include her? Anyway, a week later, they came back and said, sure, come on down. You can join the group of celebrant associations and networks, and we'd love to invite you to the next meeting, which is on the 28th of October in Canberra. So I am heading to Canberra on Sunday the 27th, and I will be there for the meeting on Monday the 28th. Josh, you are not coming to Canberra because you are going to Iceland that day, because of course you are. I will be flying the Celebrant Institute banner myself. We were given the opportunity to put forward suggestions for agenda items, but we did decide that maybe for this first meeting we would just sit back and observe. Although I think it's probably fairly clear to everyone that I will not be able to keep my mouth shut. Although I will try very hard to be diplomatic. So this is, you know, it's kind of exciting and cool. It's quite funny because I had lunch with some of my celly buddies today who were saying, oh, you know, it's really great. And I have no doubt that they've accepted you into this group because they know how well regarded you are, and they really want to have such a well-regarded voice amongst celebrants, you know, as part of that group. And I'm like, no, I don't think that they think I'm well. I don't think that they see any well-regardedness in me. I think they see a troublemaker in me. And I think they might be wondering just how much trouble I can cause. Well, let's watch this space.
I'm sad I can't be there because if nothing else, I would just like to film it. Just like not the entire thing, just like you interfacing with them. Like it wouldn't even need audio. It'd be more of a GIF. it'd be fun. But aside from that, like obviously I'm 100% there for the conversation and the debate. But I don't know what to bring to that meeting. So when we got that email saying, hey, you can put forward items for the agenda, and I think that went to a lot of people, and I started seeing the agenda items come in, I realized that as much as I might have considered myself personally and you and I as a team to be quite annoying to the AG's department, I don't think we're the most annoying people getting around. I think there's more annoying.
No.
Like, you know,
yes.
Like I've got emails. Like if you want to know who it is, give me a call. I'm going to put it on the podcast, but there's people. Yeah. there's yeah. people that are in those inboxes and I'm like, wow, I don't think we're the most annoying people getting around. If only because I feel that when you and I have put things forward, it's usually been rational, legal, progressive and helpful.
Like useful to day to day practice.
Yeah, like it might be annoying
for celebrants who are working in the world at the moment.
Yeah, like it may well also be regarded as annoying, but if you stand back and look at it unemotionally, they'll be like, ah, yeah, you got us, good idea. Whereas some of the emails I've seen flying around, like, wow, guys, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty. And look, I have to say that I've been thinking about ways of trying to get onto this committee for more than 3 years now. This was first raised with a network that I'm part of in June 2016. But I went back and I read the minutes from all of the previous meetings because they're all on the Attorney General's Department website. Yes, we know I'm a nerd. Just go with it. And I actually found that This group seems to be quite toothless. There are a lot of things that get discussed and MLCS says, yes, we'll get onto that. And the next meeting 6 months later, they say, oh, no, we still haven't done that. We're still thinking about it. We'll get onto it again next time sort of thing. So I'm not entirely sure how much of a difference it's going to make, but I'm hoping that the inclusion of some full-time working celebrants who are, you know, progressive. I know that the girls from the Celebrant Society are also involved, Anna and Sarah, and I'm hoping that between us we can start maybe to bring some, you know, some youthful enthusiasm to it. And also because we are connected to so many celebrants who are working a lot, like, the celebrants in our network, a lot of them are, you know, doing 50 plus ceremonies a year. Hopefully we can really bring a lot of those issues that hardworking celebrants are experiencing or dealing with on a regular basis to those meetings. So the plan would be in future that we would go out to all of our members, Celebrant Institute members, you know, a month or so before the meetings when we're asked to put forward any things for discussion and ask you, you know, what you'd like us to bring up. We certainly will take that on board and take those forward, and hopefully that, you know, that will help. Will just help to give a voice to some of the people who I know are not involved with traditional associations because they don't see a lot of value in a lot of what the traditional associations are providing. So we'll just see. Watch this space, but we'll report back.
Yeah, it's exciting. On the other people that are submitting ideas, I just wanted to highlight the hilarity of one person who's on the email list who they asked the question, which is not good English, who's the minister in charge of the celebrant program? And no question mark as well, so I don't know if that's a statement. It's possibly a statement. but it's honestly, I wish I could be there. I'm glad I'm going to Iceland.
Just in case there's anybody out there who doesn't know, it's the Attorney General.
Oh, so is he in charge of his office? Is that what happens?
Yeah, I know. It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So currently that's Christian Porter. He's in Western Australia. But yes, it's the Attorney General, because the Marriage, Law and Celebrant section belongs to the Attorney General's department. So just to smooth that out, if anyone is confused about that.
I'm just reading through this thread. I'm like, I just wish I could read this all on the
Stop air. Reading it. Stop reading it. Stop reading it.
It's celebrants used to be involved have lost interest. Stop.
Alrighty. All it's going to do is make your head hurt. Stop reading it.
Well, look, one item that is being brought up at that meeting, and I wanted to talk about that agenda item just for between us and our members and listeners, is the idea of a moratorium or a cap on the number of celebrants that exists in Australia. And before we talk about that, are you in a better position to talk about the previous moratorium that existed? Do you know the... Because I can't recall the exact dates. I probably should have done research.
But yeah, sure. No, that's fine. I can talk about that. So up until 2003, basically celebrants were appointed based on geography and numbers required per population type thing. This is my understanding. So, you know, the government would look at a certain postcode and go, how many people live in that area, or how many weddings are in that area, whatever it was, and they would appoint a certain number of celebrants based on that. So it was per head of population type of thing. And then in the early 2000s, there was a big review of the whole celebrant program, and they decided to drop the cap. So, you know, basically that cap meant that you basically had to wait until a celebrant retired or died in your area before you could get registered as a marriage celebrant. Kind of like getting MCC membership here at the MCG for Melbourne Cricket Club people. You have to wait till somebody dies or retires before you can get on that list. So that meant that there were people who were doing their study and then not being registered for 8 years. And just kind of waiting until they got their registration, which is quite fascinating. So in 2003, they dropped the cap, but they agreed that there would be like a 5-year period over which they would, A, get through all the people who had registered and register all those people, and then start to register all the new ones that came in. So you'll see a big uptick in registration numbers in 2003 through to 2008. So, and from then on, there's been no cap on the numbers of celebrants. So the idea basically is that the market will figure it out. This government has for a long time been very keen on reducing red tape, reducing regulation, reducing government involvement in anything and everything that they can. So I don't think they're ever going to impose another cap, because that would be more red tape. And I don't think there'll ever be another moratorium on new registrations. And really the way it works at the moment is certainly not perfect. I've many suggestions, but if to put a cap on the numbers would be anti-competitive, and that is against all the anti-competition laws that we have in this country. I don't know of a single profession where the government puts a cap on the number of places available. There might be caps put in place by like associations that, or, you know, professional bodies, or there might be caps in education. So, for example, universities might only offer a certain number of places in medical education per year, et cetera, et cetera. But I can't think of anywhere the government says, this is how many licenses we're giving out. And if anybody does know of one of a profession like that, I'd love to hear about it, because I keep thinking and I can't come up with one. So, you know, really, the market should work it out. If a person is not getting enough work to sustain their business or to cover their expenses, you know, one would expect that they would drop out. The problem here is that there are a lot of people who do 10 or less or even zero weddings per year. So part of the argument for having a cap is that there would be less celebrants, which would mean that all the celebrants who were registered could get more work each and would therefore be better at their jobs. That's one of the arguments. Maya, I have two responses to that. My first response is there are many professions that require you to do a minimum number of hours of practice in whatever you do to stay registered. So BAS agents need to complete a certain number of BASs per year to stay registered over a 3-year period, etc. My other response to it would be that they should test us every year on the legalities of the Marriage Act. That would pretty quickly weed out a lot of people. Sorry. I know that neither of those things are popular within the greater celebrant population. And I know that there are a lot of people who love to do this work as a hobby, as a side hustle, as a, you know, something that's creative that they can do on the weekends while they have their full-time job during the week. And I get that. But if your concern is that the people who are doing less than 10 weddings a year aren't keeping their practice up to date and that's why they're bad celebrants, well, the way to deal with that is to impose a minimum number of hours of practice per year. So that's my thoughts on the cap in a nutshell. What are your thoughts, Mr. Withers?
You know, Seth Godin talks about the two different races that your business can join, which is the race to the top or the race to the bottom. And the race to the bottom is characterized by different things in every industry. It often more so refers to pricing, like trying to be the cheapest is a race to the bottom of the market, you know, high street, down street, you know, high shelf, low shelf, that kind of, you know, all those different kind of market indicators. And I feel like a moratorium and a cap is part of the race to the bottom. And something about the race to the bottom is that when you win, you've won the race to the bottom, like you've lost. It's like it's a sucky race, and so I want to be in the race to the top, and because that's a race that fulfills my heart, that is good for my soul, that challenges me, and makes me want to be not just a better person, but a better business person, a better celebrant, a better service person, a better friend, a better husband, all of those things. And so I don't want a cap. You know, I became a celebrant just on the back end of the last moratorium, and I believe that anyone who has become a celebrant in the last 10 years, aka post moratorium, that it would be hypocritical for you to be calling for a cap because you came in without a cap. It's a little bit like immigration. If you immigrated to Australia and then became anti-immigration, I'm like, oh, that's strange, you know, because there is enough room for all of us here. Like, I've got common and standard advice I give to people who look to me for thoughts on becoming a celebrant. And I tell everyone this, and if you've been one of these people, you would know that I'm about to say that if you're planning on being a mediocre celebrant, if you're planning on being an average celebrant, like just a good enough celebrant, then maybe do another job, like go and be a mediocre comedian or go and be a mediocre nurse or something like that, because there's enough average, like just giving it enough celebrants. There's enough of those people. What there's not enough of is great celebrants, like celebrants that give 110%, celebrants that are running sustainable, awesome businesses, and so that's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in that kind of race. Like that's where my heart is with the Celebrant Institute, and this podcast is encouraging people to join me on that race, so that we can all just try and be better than each other. Like what a spectacular race when we're all in that game, when we're all performing at the top of our game. And I just don't think a moratorium is in that spirit.
Yeah, totally. I know that my views on, I hate to call them this, but my views on hobby celebrants are really unpopular. And I've had this discussion with people who I'm, you know, very good friends with, who talk about the fact that they don't want to be a celebrant full time because they don't want to lose their love of it. They don't want it to become, you know, the thing they do day in, day out, because they're worried that they'll lose the passion and that they'll lose, you know, the joy that they find in it. But, you know, I'm going to say it anyway, and I have said it on the podcast before, I think the one where we were throwing eggs at me, that, again, I don't know too many professions where people are a member of that profession and they do, like, 5 hours of it a year. You know, it's not – I don't know too many hobby nurses or accountants who do it as a side hustle. And I don't mean to offend anyone by that. I know that I've had this discussion with many of my friends, and I you know, but that's, you know, it's kind of my thoughts around it. So I think that you can't kind of have it both ways. You can't say I'm concerned about standards slipping and, you know, the only way for standards not to slip are for celebrants to have more work each and therefore we need a cap. But at the same time also say, oh, but I only want to do 10 weddings a year. You can't kind of have it both ways. Anyway, that's kind of my thoughts. Sorry, you can throw eggs at me if you want.
No, no, let's dig a deeper hole. Let's go.
I think also it's interesting because a lot of the people who I hear talking about wanting to have a cap are people who were registered around the same time as I was, which was October 2013. In fact, it's going to be in 11 days is my 6-year registration anniversary. And at that time, there were 10,500 celebrants registered, Commonwealth Registered Married Celebrants. There are now about 9,000. So I'm really interested that there are a lot of people who were registered when I was, when there were more celebrants than there are now, yet they joined that number and created even more. And now those are the people who are calling for a cap or a moratorium when there are less than there were. I think part of the problem for some of the celebrants who've been around for a while is that the Cert 4 now is really quite intensive and difficult. So the people who've done the work and paid the money and gotten through the Cert 4, they actually really want to be celebrants. They might not want to be full-time celebrants. They might want to be hobby celebrants. That's okay. But they're ambitious and they're hungry. They are working hard on their marketing and getting their name out there. And yeah, they're competition. So a lot of I'm hearing a lot of people saying, I've got less work now because there's all these new celebrants, therefore there should be a cap. That's not, to me, that's not how competition or markets work. Competition should push us to do better so that we can continue to win the work. We shouldn't want to say, you know, I want to win the work because there aren't any other celebrants available who could do that because there's only 2,000 of us. So therefore I will win more work because there's less competition. I don't think that that pushes anyone to greatness. I think that pushes more to mediocrity, despite what many people who were around at the time of the cap say. You know, they say having less celebrants means everybody does a better job because they're doing it more often. Whereas I feel a bit like if there's less celebrants, there's less competition, it's less difficult to get booked, I feel like I would do a less good job.
Yeah, I think potentially. I think it's about accountability as well. And accountability can be delivered in different ways. But, you know, if you forget celebrancy, maybe look at taxes. Like imagine Australia's already got self-reporting of taxes. But imagine if there was zero accountability to the self-reporting of taxes. I think it would just so happen that all of us, oops, we made no money this year. Sorry, government. Like if there was no accountability, if there was no organization that held you to account for your self-reporting of taxes, I think all of us would say we earned no money and thus had to pay no taxes. So accountability actually delivers standards and helps us be better people. And so in celebrancy, there's obviously the MLCS that does hold us accountable, and there's the law. But you know, the best thing to hold me accountable, because being accountable to the MLCS and the law was actually super bloody easy. Like, saying the monitors are winning and taking 30 days notice, I'm like, yeah, cool, that's like not that hard, dude. But the true thing that keeps me accountable is other people in the marketplace challenging my business model, my fee, the way I do business, the way I handle inquiries, the way I post online, the way I market, the way I deliver ceremonies. And when I say keeping me accountable, by offering differences to that and having clients or potential clients question me and say, oh, Sarah does this, and why do you do that, and why do you charge this, and et cetera. And that kind of thing, like, that drives me to be a better person and a better celebrant. And I don't want to lose that accountability.
Agreed. Agreed. So I think it's fair to say that you and I are against a cap.
The jury's out. Let's not call it yet.
And look, you know, please, if you have a thought about a cap or a moratorium, we're really interested to hear it. You know, if it's different from something that we've already talked about, or if you can, you know, give me your reasons why you think a cap would be a good idea. We're, you know, really interested to hear that, because that's kind of part of why we do this. We talk a lot, but I'm really interested to hear the thoughts of our listeners. Please challenge us. You know, please feel free to say, no, you're wrong, because I want to hear that. I know that I said it when we had Glenn Mackay on, but that was part of why I had Glenn on, because I want to continue to challenge our listeners, but also ourselves in the way we think and what we're thinking about. So, you know, if you have any thoughts about cap or a moratorium on new registrations, please send them through to hello@celebrant.fm, or you can post on the Facebook page, I'm sure, when we post the podcast. But let us know. Really interested to hear. Totally.
On that note, Sarah.
Yes.
As far as calling you to account for things you've done in public, can I talk to you about your Memoji?
Sure.
So in the latest update of iOS for your iPhone or iPad, you get to choose a Memoji, which is like a cartoon version of yourself, and you get to choose hairstyles, face shapes, sizes, colors, etc. It's essentially, what do they call it when you do it at the police station, when you have to identify a criminal? Like, it's a something kit? Like
an identity kit.
Yeah, identity kit, yeah. It's like an identity kit for the modern age. And you're not the first person. I've had two other friends who have called out and on their Memojis. I think the face is okay with you. And look, I understand it's got to be hard with your hair, but the Memoji hair doesn't look like your hair.
Well, there's only that was the only one with spiky hair.
But it's not spiky. It's more like a. It's like a Great Barrier Reef jellyfish, like with the kind of with like you know the prongs on it are like fingers. Like that's what the Memoji hair looks like. It's distracting. Well,
then
and it's not
I new. Would like you to contact Apple and get them to design a better version of Memoji spiky hair for me to choose, because okay. There are not many options in the short hair to pick from.
All right, well, I just wanted to call it out publicly, that's all. I just we've got a podcast, I may as well use it. Talking about public accountability, though, the Marriage Law and Celebrant section, God, we are talking about those guys a lot today. Have sent out a survey, and look, the long and the short of it is there's a full blog post about this on the Celebrant Institute website, and it's available to all like members and other. It's a free blog post. If you look on the celebrant.institute website, it's called The Survey About OPD and the New Celebrant Application Process, which is a very exciting name. I don't want to go through because it's a long post and there's a lot of stuff there. But could you kind of just deliver what you believe they're trying to do with the survey and where you would like it to go?
Okay, so every celebrant should have received a link to this survey. Responses are due by the 22nd of October, which we're recording this on the 15th of October, so that's in a week. It's really, really important that as many people as possible respond to this survey. I know, because I have spies, that the associations group met 2 weeks before this survey went out by teleconference. And the message at that teleconference was essentially, we have made this decision, as in MLCS, we have made this decision that we're going to drop OPD to 1 hour a year and we're going to change the application process for new celebrants. But we're going to send out a survey so that we can be seen to have consulted. I think that the reason they are feeling a pretty laissez-faire about this survey is because the last time they did a survey of all celebrants, less than a third of the celebrant population bothered to respond to it. So that tells me that they go, well, celebrants aren't going to respond to this anyway, so we can send out a survey. We can make it ask questions that are really leading and misleading and get it to produce the response we want. And not many people will respond to it anyway. So we can just go ahead with our plan of action that we've already decided on. So that's why it's really important that everybody responds. The next thing that's really important, though, is that you read the questions very carefully in conjunction with my post on the Celebrant Institute to understand what we think they're actually asking. Because the way the questions have been written, they are written to elicit a response that I don't think is in the interests of Commonwealth Registered Marriage celebrants going forward. But the average celebrant in the street doesn't have the background information and knowledge that I have because I have a lot of networks and people that I talk to who have, you know, knowledge from various meetings and those sorts of things. The average celebrant on the street doesn't have that information. So they don't know what the plan is that MLCS is trying to get support for through the responses to this survey. And the consultation paper that came out with the survey is very vague. Nowhere does it say, I mean, except for the OPD, I know that it says we want to do 1 hour of OPD instead of five. But for the changes to the application process for new celebrants, nowhere does it set out this is what we want to do instead of the current state of affairs. So as Josh said, the post is very long and it's got a lot of research in it. We know I'm a nerd, just go with it. It's got a lot of statistics and the way they've used the statistics that are quoted in the survey. So please read my post, get a bit informed about what this is all about, and please, please respond to the survey. I've had people ask me, is it compulsory? Do I really have to do it? It's not compulsory, but please do it. Because the more responses they get that are against their plan, the more likely it is they won't just go ahead with it. Okay, so why do I think it's a problem if we drop from 5 hours to 1 hour of OPD a year? I suppose that's important for me to say because I know a lot of celebrants would go, yay, only 1 hour, OPD is so boring. Well, basically because there are a lot of celebrants who don't know how to do their job. Sorry, that's just how it is. And they don't know how to do their job with...
But before you skip past that, and the Celebrant Institute is set up to receive questions and so please never stop asking questions if you're members. Like we are here for you. But it came out of a place of a lot of the questions we received. We thought a lot of the same questions are being asked. And honestly, a lot of the questions are things that are fundamentals. And so it's fine that you don't know them, and we want to help you know them. But also, there's an assumption in the marriage law and settlement section that everyone knows these fundamentals because we put out the guidelines, we put out the fact sheet, and that's they feel that they've fulfilled their role in making sure everyone knows what they need to know, and they don't. Sorry, Sarah. I don't want to skip past the fact that
not everyone's at that point. Yeah, that's spot on, and I think that you know, our lives are so hectic and so busy that particularly if you're not a full-time celebrant, it's really easy to miss stuff. You know, the fact sheet that came out about marriage obligations in an online environment, which we'll talk about again in a minute, that came out at the very bottom of an email on the 22nd of June. The rest of the email was all about when you'll get your invoice for your annual fee and what happens if you don't pay it and yada, yada. And right down the bottom, it said, oh, by the way, we've released a new fact sheet. It wasn't even attached to the email. You can get it if you go to this page on our website. A lot of people have missed it. They've just, it's a, what is outlined in that fact sheet is a massive change to the way we work, but a lot of people have missed it. And that doesn't mean that they don't care or that there's anything wrong with them. You know, it's been poorly communicated. So that is one of the reasons that OPD is so important, because that is an opportunity to be able to communicate some of those changes. Now, an hour a year, which would be run online through the Celebrant portal on the Attorney General's Department website. So you would log into your Celebrant portal, which is where you pay your fee. You'd probably click through some PowerPoint slides. You might answer a few questions and you'd be done. That, to me, is not going to give, A, the updates that happen throughout the year, B, the in-depth explanation that a good trainer can give you, the interpretation about how this actually works, because often these fact sheets and the guidelines, they're not written in completely plain English. And sometimes you do need, some celebrants need someone to interpret them and say, what does this actually mean for me in practice? So it won't allow for that. And I simply don't think an hour is long enough anyway. An hour is not really long enough. And when they say an hour, they're catering for the slowest learners, which means that for someone like me, it would probably take 15 minutes. Not enough for anything. So that's why I'm so concerned about it. I'm also concerned because they want to reduce OPD to only talking about legalities. I have some sympathy for that. I think we could easily do 5 hours on marriage celebrant legalities per year. But I also know that there's a lot of other stuff about how we work that people are not seeking professional development in. You know, things about modernizing ceremony language, like we talked about with Glenn the other week about, you know, rings are the circle of love and blah, blah, blah. If we don't have, you know, opportunities like OPD, we're not going to have opportunities to learn new ways of doing things in our celebrant practice. And yes, we could go out and do professional development on our own bat. And I do many, many hours of professional development every year on my own, but not all celebrants will do that. And particularly if they're not doing many weddings, they won't invest the time and the money and the energy into going out and learning new things. So I think it's a concern all around. When it comes to it, 5 hours a year is not a particularly onerous obligation. There are many professions out there that have to do a lot more than that. I see the work that we do in its kind of legal aspect at a similar level as a BAS agent, the kind of bookkeeper who does business activity statements for small business. I see that we're at a similar level to that. They have to do 45 hours over a 3-year period with a minimum of 5 hours in every year of OPD. So that's really 15 hours a year over a three-year period. So 5 hours a year is not a lot. And 1 hour a year, quite frankly, is pathetic. So please do read the article on the Celebrant Institute. If you can't find it, just email us and we'll send it to you, hello@celebrant.fm. And please, please respond to the survey.
If you've already responded, I believe you can click the link and refill out the survey like according to this new information you would have received as well.
Really?
I believe so.
That's really bad, because that means that I could go in and answer the survey as many times as I like. And
I wasn't going to put so many words into everyone's mouth.
Right. Well, I'm just going to test that right now, because if I can click on that on my, okay, so this one, if I clicked on it on my computer where I've already taken it, it says you've already taken this survey. So that's good. It has recognized my IP address and said, no, you can't do it. If I go to it on my phone, I just want to do this right now. Survey. I go to it on open. If I go to it on my phone, I can do it again.
So if you'd already filled it out, you can't edit your responses?
So that's not ideal. You can't edit your responses, no.
Right, well, we'll leave but everyone with that information and they can do with what they like.
Yeah. Wow. So that means I could take that survey on a bunch of different computers and a bunch of different, like I could do it on my phone and my tablet, and that's not very good. They didn't think that through, did they?
No, they didn't.
Right, moving right along. So that's the survey. That's my rant. Please do it.
We've you mentioned the online obligations being one of the things that many people have missed because it was just at the bottom of an email. And I feel like we've covered it once before in the podcast, and I feel we've covered it on the Institute, but I wanted to just recover it just in the smoothest, quick possible way, because I think we've had like at least three or four questions about this week already.
Yeah, we have.
So one of the people they've actually read the fact sheet, but the fact sheet. I feel like it's not written by someone who uses the internet today. And so,
it's also written by a lawyer or a public servant. It's not written by a celebrant.
So part of the question I asked is, I'm understanding that I am able to receive the NOIM via email and ID electronically now, email, text, photo, fax, etc. And I don't need to obtain the original NOIM or cite in person the original ID documents. Is that correct? So do you want to answer that question for everyone quickly?
So that question is sort of correct. So let's start with the NOIM. Yes, you can receive the NOIM electronically by email. The electronic copy then becomes the original. So you don't need to get the original hard copy from the couple. But remember, you might still need to print it out so you can write on it the day you received it. And after the wedding, you can fill in the details of where and when it was solemnized, and you can write your number and your signature on it. If you're using an Apple Pencil
and a tablet,
you can write on it that way. Yes, so you might not need to print it out depending on what kind of technology you're using. So that's the NOIM. Yes, you can receive it electronically, and no, then you don't need to get the hard copy from the couple. In terms of identity documents, you can see a photo or a scan of an original passport or birth certificate as evidence of place and date of birth, not a certified copy. So this is specifically not a certified copy because we can't see a photocopy of the original. You have to see a photo of the original or a scan of the original of the evidence of date and place of birth. Now, for evidence of identity, when we are seeing photo identification, the purpose is to show that the person named on the NOIM is the person standing in front of us. If we receive a driver's license by email, but we've never met the person, how do we know that belongs to them? We don't. So when you do meet the person, you need to be able to hold up that email of the driver's license next to their face, get them to show you the original driver's license, and then you'd be good to go. Alternatively, you can use Skype or FaceTime and they can show you the driver's license next to their face. It needs to be clear enough that you can read it to make sure that the name on the driver's license is the same as the name on the NOIM, but you could do it that way. So the identity bit is a bit confusing. We can also receive divorce and death certificates electronically, photo or a scan of the original, or of course with divorce orders issued since 2010 or 2011, whenever it was, they only come electronically anyway, so that's fine. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, that answers it well. And we've kind of already talked about this, but the second part to the question brings in the word Skype, and the question goes, also, I am allowed to cite ID via Skype, yet not witness the NOIM in this way. Is that right too?
Correct, yes. So you can, as long as you can read the details of the driver's license or the passport or whatever it is over Skype, yes, you can cite that over Skype. That's fine. It needs to be legible though. but you cannot witness them signing the noim over Skype and then you receive the noim and you sign it as the signature, because the Act says that the notice of intended marriage must be signed in the presence of the authorised witness. That doesn't mean electronic presence, that means physical presence. So you cannot witness signatures over Skype or FaceTime or any other kind of video sharing software. I don't want anybody to think there's a loophole that they can use some system, Zoom or anything else that I haven't mentioned.
Because it's not on the list. You didn't say Google Duo. You didn't say it.
Yeah. No.
Less.
So you can't witness signatures over any kind of video conferencing. You can only witness signatures in person.
One last topic for the podcast today, which is it's always controversial, and I feel like there's a million blog posts about it. And when you brought it up with me, I thought, oh, that's funny. I'm actually being interviewed on a podcast about this on Thursday. And so just a fun topic to talk about. Children at weddings. And I know I actually don't know what your angle on this was. And so I've got a really quick one. Do you want me to share mine first?
Yeah, please.
So I've actually done a Rebels Guide episode about this, and my thoughts about children at weddings, if you choose to have them there, if you choose to not have kids at your weddings, like, more power to you. Like, good on you for actually thinking about something and whatnot. And so that's what I tell my couples. But if you are going to have children there, particularly, and I feel you're more so referencing this, if there's children involved with doing things, like we're talking flower kids, you know, holding rings, all the things that you might get kids to do. My advice to couples and anyone, if everyone ever in the wedding industry, my advice is just have really low expectations, because they're kids. Correct. They're not robots, nor are they Broadway performers. They're
totally,
they're young children. And so that's my angle on that. But where did it come from for your topic?
Yeah, so it came out of a post on the AOCC Facebook group where a celebrant was talking about a situation she'd had at a wedding where the 10-year-old flower girl was going to escort the couple's 3-year-old child down the aisle and carry the baby. I think all 3 children belonged to the couple who were getting married. Sounds lovely. The 10-year-old and the 3-year-old, no problems. They were coming down the aisle and then they were to sit with the grandparents. No, the 10-year-old and the baby, no problems. They sat with the grandparents. The 3-year-old, however, decided that he wanted to stay with daddy. And no matter how much cajoling they did, would not go and sit with the grandparents. And grizzled and whinged and made a lot of noise and meant that the focus was taken away from the bride and groom. So the grandmother took the child away. They all paused while the child was taken away and eventually came back when the child was calm. But that meant that the grandmother missed out on seeing a lot of her son get married. So that was a problem for the celebrant. And so the celebrant was saying, if you're going to have kids in the wedding, reconsider it. So I think what she
was... Reconsider it?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think what she was basically saying is don't have kids at your wedding. I've got a massive issue with this. Massive, massive issue. Very similar to your take on it, Josh. I tell my clients the only job of the children is to look adorable.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's their only job, and it's not going to be hard because they're going to be dressed in a really cute little, like, dress that flows around when they turn around, or they're going to be in a tiny little suit and it's going to be so cute. Their only job is to look adorable. If they don't walk down the aisle properly, if they don't stand where they're meant to, if they don't bring the rings up, if whatever it is, none of that's a problem, because a marriage ceremony is a piece of life. It's not a Broadway performance. And I know you talk about this a lot, Josh. It's not a theater production. It's just a slice of life. And you know what? Kids are unpredictable. They're going to do whatever they want. We can't really control that. So I always tell my couples, don't worry about it. I have a microphone and I will always be louder. So don't worry about if the kid starts to cry, oh, it's terrible, we need to take them out. If you want to pause, we can. If you want to take a moment to go comfort your child, that's fine. If you want to pick them up, bring it on. I did a wedding once where they had 2 small children and we ended up Both of them were a bit grisly. So we ended up sharing the personal vows with the bride holding the daughter and the groom holding the son. And it was beautiful because the entire family was included in that moment.
Yeah.
And isn't that lovely? Because why shouldn't it be part about the whole family? Marriage is not just about two people. It's about an entire family, particularly when there are small children involved. And I got quite annoyed about that post, and I really wanted to write something about how I completely disagreed with it, but I also didn't have the emotional energy to argue with that particular person on that day. And somebody said to me, I think this would be a really great topic for the podcast. So here I am. So this is my thing with kids. They're not predictable. Their only job is to look adorable. I can always be louder. Don't worry about that. And you know what? If the focus is not on the bride and groom for 5 seconds, the bride and groom will probably be quite happy about that. Because there are a lot of couples. Yeah. And there are a lot of couples who are really panicky about all eyes being on them. You know, they're like, oh, you know, I don't want everybody to be looking at me. They'll probably be delighted if everyone's looking at the adorable child. At my wedding on Saturday, the flower girl, who I think she's 3, she did the most perfect job walking down the aisle, throwing a handful of flower petals this side and then that side. Then she got to the end of the aisle. She still had flowers in her basket. So she just tipped it upside down and shook them all out. It was super cute. Yeah, it wasn't what she was meant to do, but it was super cute. Everybody laughed and gave her a round of applause. And why not? You know, kids are not predictable, but they're adorable, and let them be a part of it. And I, you know, I just really firmly would hate for new celebrants to think that a ceremony has to be some kind of staid, conservative, you know, sacred, solemn moment in a couple's life. It, you know, it can be full of joy and fun and laughter and, you know, little things that happen, because they will always remember those things. And that's lovely. Why not? I had one once. The flower girl was walking down the aisle and the ring bearer walked behind her picking up all the flower petals. I mean, you know, you can't script that stuff. And and it's something that I'll never forget. So, yeah, that's really my thing about kids. Please don't try to talk your couples out of having their kids at the wedding. If they decide they don't want to, that's their prerogative. But please, as celebrants, don't say, you know, reconsider.
Yeah. Did you ever see that social post I did where I can't remember if I held one of the kids or two of the kids. The couple had 2 daughters, and they were in the, I don't know, 3 to 5 age range, something like that. Like, small enough that I could hold them in an arm on the hip, but, you know, big enough to be there walking. And, you know, they could have a bit of a chat. And one of the girls, she when mum and dad started exchanging vows and they kind of turned their attention to each other, she kind of turned her attention to me and she wanted to be picked up. And I thought, you know what, like, I can pick her up. We kind of got to know each other, and so it wasn't creepy. And I just kind of kept her company while mum and dad exchanged vows, and it was really cute. Like, I love those kids. They're cute as hell.
Yeah.
I look at the photos, and I'm like, that's so awkward. Like, I'm in this forest holding a kid while mum and dad exchanged vows. I'm going to try and find that photo because it was actually super cute. But yeah, you know, I'm welcoming of kids at weddings. Like, I've had a kid rolling a Tonka truck up and down the leg of my pants at one ceremony.
Awesome. And love it.
There's like 150 guests watching it and no one's doing anything about it. So I just had to kind of deal with it, I guess.
Just go with it. Yeah.
Go with it, yeah. So, you know,
when I've had kids, you know, get disruptive at ceremonies, and I have checked in with the parents and said, you know, are you okay for me to continue? And they've been like, yeah, keep going. He's not going to shut up. Just keep going. So I did a few people have said to me something that they always mention to their couples, which I'd never thought about, probably because I don't have my own children, but that they always say to their couples to nominate somebody who's going to look after the kids who is not a grandparent, because the grandparents probably do want to be there watching their children get married. You know, they're the couple's parents. They probably do want to be in there in that moment. So if you can nominate an aunt or a cousin or a, you know, good family friend or someone, that will be the one that will, if the child needs to be taken away for a moment, will do that better than, and so suggest that to the couple, you know, when they say that the kids are going to be there. And I think that's a really great idea. But don't, like, just don't be crap.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a father, and I feel like that's the widest thing you can say. As a father. but like, as a dad, if Brit and I were in a ceremony today, look, honestly, I'm probably on the edge 50-50 as to whether or not we'd have the kids there. Like Brit and I are definitely of the opinion that there's some periods of life where kids can be babysat or looked after or with grandma. We're not the couple that like a child has to be with us 24/7. Like Brit's literally in LA this week. She's in a different country. And so it's cool. But then also 100% equally, we love Luna, and like I love hanging out with her. Like she's the coolest kid. Like you hang out with her a month or two ago, she's way cooler than she was. Like if she was cool then, she's like a million times cooler now. Like she's just a fun kid to hang out with. Yeah, and so if we were getting married today, like I know I'd be pretty cool with her hanging out with us in the ceremony. And
yeah,
and you've got to give your couples the opportunity to actually to be that couple.
Yeah, for sure. And let them make that decision themselves and be welcoming to whatever it is that they want to do. Because, you know, and I think this all comes back again to my philosophy that the wedding is about them. And they get to pick if they want to have a sand ceremony with 14 people. I might not love that, but they get to do that because it's their ceremony. And I'm not going to try and talk them out of it. If they want to have their kids, if they've got 6 kids and they want all of them there and they're screaming and running around, you know what? I'm okay with that because that's what they've chosen. So really, that's kind of my thing. And I'm never going to try and say to them, your vows are too long. Keep that for the reception. I'm never going to say to them, don't have those 4 readings. I'm going to talk to them about what the implications are of doing that. I'm going to say to them, if you've got 4 readings and 3 rituals, hey, do you realize that your ceremony is going to go for 50 minutes? I'm going to talk to them about that, but I'm not going to say, therefore, I think you shouldn't do it. I'm just going to talk to them about the implications and the logistics and all of that kind of thing. And I think that's our job, to facilitate whatever they want while just making sure they're aware of what it all means.
I've just thought of a new marketing campaign for you. Sarah Aird, I'm never going to give you up. Never going to let you down. Never going to run around. Me eat your dessert on you. Never going to make your kids cry. Never going to say goodbye. Dude, never going to tell a lie and hurt you.
Terrible. Stop.
Sarah, thanks for making some time for me to have a chat to you again this week. It's always a pleasure. Look, like I feel like we've done podcasts in like some kind of cadence of late. Like there's like a bit of a rhythm.
There's a few, which is cool. Yay us. Sometimes that happens.
Yay us.
Yeah.
If you've gotten this far and you thought, you know what, not the worst podcast I've ever heard, then please do any number of things that would bring everyone joy. This includes leaving a rating on whatever your podcast app is, Overcast or Apple Podcasts or Google or Spotify, or like tap the like or the star or the review or whatever it might be, because that stuff just really helps. Like I looked at our ratings the other day, like we're like the 35th most popular relationship podcast in New Zealand. And I'm like, we could get higher. We could go higher than that.
In New Zealand?
In New Zealand, yeah. People like us.
That's cool.
If you know a celebrant, please make sure they know about this. Just do a bit of a share. Do a bit of a likey-like, you know, something like that. Just, it would be a joy if other people knew that this existed. My name is Josh Withers. You can find me online at marriedbyjosh or marriedbyjosh.com. And Sarah, you are Sarah Aird Sullivan?
I am Sarah Aird Civil Celebrant, if you don't mind. At Sarah Aird Civil Celebrant. I know, you missed
Sarah Aird Celibate. Yeah, Sarah Aird, that was...
No, I'm also gone not, now. The joke's, not that either.
The joke's gone.
Not that either. Except, well, anyway. Wow. At Sarah Aird Civil Celebrant or sarahaird.com.au. And, of course, you can find us at celebrant.institute and celebrant.fm and hello at celebrant.fm and hello at celebrant.institute. There are all the places. We love to hear from you, so please get in touch.
Sarah, have an amazing day. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk soon. Bye, everyone.